Broadcasting from the confines of an abandoned radio station in the secluded ghost town of High Strangeness, just outside of Area 51. It's time for full disclosure of the topics. They told us we're off limits. Hello, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, and this is Coast to Coast AM, broadcasting from the News Radio 840 WHAS studios of iHeartMedia in Louisville, Kentucky, home of Christmas traditions, family, friends, and food. Yep, it just is what it is, and it's that simple. One of the last times I can say Merry Christmas to you. It's dwindling down, but it's still going on, and we're going to take advantage of it here. Tonight, Al Ridenour talking about Krampus, and Sam Sharon talking to us about, well, creepy things. And he even has a creepy coloring book. Yep, I'm looking forward to talking to both of these guys. We're going to get started here on Coast to Coast AM, but time now for you to turn off the lights to enjoy the last hours of Christmas in a creepy kind of way. And join me for another interesting evening of conversation, much needed education, and the chance that we might get a little closer to the truth of what lurks amongst us and what is beyond. Hey, everybody, I'm Connie Willis. Al Ridenour is next here. Merry Christmas, Coast to Coast AM. And as he said, you're listening to Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. Merry Christmas to you. And you hear that tune? You can turn it up just a little bit more for me. That's the man, George Michael. And that's when he was with Wham. Came out in 86, last Christmas. One of the classic tunes now and forever. Passed away today, George Michael, at 53. Too young. Basically, what we found out was that he had passed peacefully in his home. But just recently, about just a few minutes ago, saw that it could have been heart failure. So I guess it's going to be a while before we know the answer. But you know what? So many of you out there, I know I posted it, responded to me in that. And so I know a lot of us, I mean, how could you not like George Michael? He was just great in every way. Men and women both loved him. So you're going to hear a little bit of this music tonight in remembrance of him. So we're going to, sad thing, he's only 53. So anyway, like I said, we're going to play that a little bit more. I'm kind of speechless on it because it's like, what? We were just talking about him last night playing this music and how wonderful this tune is and such a tradition now to play it at all times around Christmas and how it gets you into the spirit. So anyway, we'll definitely miss George Michael and let you know if we do learn anything else too. I appreciate you playing that for me, Nathan. Nathan out of LA, our board op and producer, helping us out here tonight, and may get to talk with him from time to time to see how his Christmas went. And I hope your Christmas went well, everybody. Again, I can still say that for a couple hours, Merry Christmas. And I did want to pass on to the fact that Santa did deliver, because we kept a track with him last night with NORAD all night long. And he might be dropping off maybe one or two more somewhere, just, you know, on Misfit Island or something. But he has delivered 7,281,439,471 gifts. Whew. I hope they were all found, because some of them, you know, always that good one's hidden behind a desk or a chest drawers or something, you know, always, right? There was always that one that you didn't think you got. And then somebody would say, hey, did you look under there, behind the dresser over there? There's something hidden. I think Santa left it over there. Those were always the best. So hopefully they've all been found and everybody's had a good time with that. And anyway, Merry Christmas again. And again, sorry to hear about George Michael. But we're going to get into some really good talk. And last night we talked with Bishop James Long, and we talked about Jesus and the history of Jesus and the actual true narrative of Christmas and why we celebrate and why it's that day. And very, very nice. A lot of great people calling in and writing in and saying wonderful positive things about, you know, very happy that we went with the true story of Christmas. So tonight, then everybody was happy. We're glad you went to the creepy Christmas. So they were happy. Everybody's happy that we hit both sides. And I agree with them. And that was kind of the plan, and to have a nice whole entire Christmas weekend. Appreciate that. And I'm wanting to say I'm very happy, too, to be able to fill in and be a part of all the Christmas stuff. You know, this is the night that George always has off. So that's why he's not here, because he normally works every holiday. If it falls on a weekday, you know, or the days that he works, he's here. But if it's on a day that he already has off, yay, I get to come in. So I'm happy about that, too. And he needs to enjoy himself out there, too. He works really hard, and we all appreciate him very much. And thank goodness, because we have Coast to Coast AM. So let's get on with the little creepy stuff tonight. What do you say? Let's do that. Al Ridenour. What a guy. I'm looking forward to meeting him. Normally, I talk to the people ahead of time. But tonight's people, I didn't want to do that because I really want to hear everything firsthand from them. Even when I call people ahead of time to say hi and get to know them a little bit, if I don't already know them, you don't, you know, as an interviewer, you don't want to have a conversation with everybody on the phone and then go on the air with them because the conversation has happened. I like to have it spontaneous. I want to have a conversation. I'm about having conversations. So this is going to be a real treat to be able to talk with him. I've heard nothing but really great things from people. But my perspective currently is looking through his book and, you know, seeing some of the other things, too. And, of course, we'll talk about that tonight. But his book is The Krampus, An Old Dark Christmas, Roots and Rebirth of the Folkloric Devil. And it's an unbelievable book if you've never seen it before. And I know there's a ton of Krampus fans out there. You have let me know. So if you didn't get this book, I bet you have. It is a gorgeous book. The writing is wonderful. This guy, you know, Al knows his stuff without a doubt. I mean, he knows his stuff. He's ventured out there. He knows it, lives it, eats it, drinks it. But the beautiful pictures and the artwork and, wow. Anyway, let's go ahead and bring on Al. He holds a BA's. He's highly educated in German and English literature, has worked as an author, journalist, animator, and artist, and it works, you know, shows in his work. He's been a fixture in the West Coast underground art community since the mid-90s. So just, gosh, could you imagine sitting there at, you know, somewhere just hanging out with him, having dinner? His Krampus research, now that's what's taking him all over the world, and that's what the book's all about. I mean, he's been everywhere. I'll let him tell that story. But he co-founded Krampus Los Angeles, and that's an organization that made the that's made the city ground zero for American Krampus mania. He's translated and produced the only English language version of the 19th century Krampus play, written articles, lectured on the topic. I mean, he's the real deal. So, Al, it's very nice to meet you. Welcome to Coast, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for the nice words about the book.
Oh, my goodness. I'm thinking, okay, what are we going to get here? What's going to happen? And I saw this. I looked at it and went, this is beautiful already before I even opened it. And it's so, I'm like, my goodness, how much did this book cost? Thank you for sending it to me. It's a gorgeous book. The pictures, though. And did you take all of the pictures or most of them?
Oh, no. There's a handful of, in there for me, but some different museum archives, they're from the groups that are actually involved in the customs over in Europe. They came from all over, really. I wish I could say I had been there to photograph all these things, but only a few of them are actually mine.
Oh, well, it is gorgeous. Everything looks wonderful. It's all like everything is not just HD, but 4K. I mean, it's just amazing. It's really detailed. And people that are into this, it's unbelievable how people are into this. I'll just tell you before we start, you know, because I want you to tell the story, of course. But before we do that, I just want you to know I lived in Philly for like 3-4 years. And I remember like a Krampus run or something in Philly. Big deal. Big deal.
Yeah, that's one of the earlier American Krampus events in Philadelphia. I'm in touch with the woman, Amber, who runs that. And they're going strong.
When I saw it, I was like, what's going on here? You know, when you're new to Philly after living in the South all your life, and then you go up there and then you see that happening, you're like, is this a cult? Is this real? What is going on? It was pretty scary. You never know on what street, you know, when you're walking Philly. So please tell me, Tell me about, like, last night we talked about Jesus and even, nailed in the Saint Nicholas with Santa and talked about Santa. And tell us about where did Krampus come from and how are we taking it here in America and how does that fit in with Christmas? I mean, this is some evil stuff.
Well, where he comes from is pretty, that's in the, geographically, that's pretty easy to answer. He's native to Western Austria and southern, south, eastern Germany. And that area is all, it's Alpine. It's the Alps, so the two countries border each other, and the Alps are running right through there. So it's an Alpine custom. And as far as, where he comes from in terms of why do we have this monstrous thing, that's a more complicated question. That's what my whole book is about, actually, because there are lots of different threads that fed into making this tradition, and some of them go back to the 17th century. There's one way, if you look at it, what trace one thread, it's back to the 1100s. But if the thing that we recognize today as Krampus is pretty much, I think we say it begins in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And what he is, let me just cover that because I know not everybody is up on that. He basically plays sort of the bad cop to Saint Nicholas's good cop. So in Austria and Bavaria, when it's actually what the days that are really associated with him, that is not Christmas Day, actually, not the 25th. It's Saint Nicholas Day. It's the Catholic day, a feast day of the saint. So there, their Saint Nicholas is a little closer to the church figure than our sort of secular jolly old Saint Nicholas. And so this character, he'll a person in the village dressed as a bishop, which is how they visualize Saint Nicholas. We'll go house to house, and like our St. Nicholas, there is some kind of evaluation of have the kids been good. The question is posed, have the kids been good? And if they're good, okay, that's great. And they get very little treats, actually. It's not like a big Christmas extravaganza. It's more like little sweets. But if they have been bad, or even if they haven't been bad, as sort of a deterrent to them deciding to be bad next year, Nicholas brings with him this several. Usually, there's maybe six of them of these Krampuses, which are traditionally they're costumed in fur. They wear horns, usually goat horns, and they have masks that are traditionally carved in wood and very grotesque. So they sort of look like our devil, but a little more. Let's just say a little more rustic.
Yeah, they all have Gene Simmons tongues too, by the
The
way.
tongue, the lolling tongue is definitely one of the
Wow.
attributes. Yeah, the long
Absolutely.
tongue.
So Krampus is not, is Krampus one guy or is Krampus
Yeah, that seems, that Krampus is
it's got
actually, I'm glad I do talk about that in my book because, and I guess it's something that people don't quite understand in the U.S. at this point, and well, they're learning. It's Krampus is like, it's a species of folkloric being. So what I tend to tell people is Krampus is a word like vampire. It's not Dracula. It's not a proper noun. So there are many Krampuses. Occasionally, people will see a picture of a sort of representative Krampus and they assume that's the one figure. But it's basically a name for a type of devil that's associated with Christmas or Advent season, the Christmas season.
And it's about keeping kids on a good side, and
Keeping them
if
on a straight and
not,
narrow. In the old days,
okay.
what they would, I mean, these are Catholic countries we're talking about. So in the old days, along with the sort of evaluating the kids' behavior, there would be, they would have to recite something maybe from their catechism, something they learned from in church. And so there was a little bit of an actual test besides just the parents answering for have the kids been good. Nowadays, they still actually, in this custom, it does still exist. It's been changing over the years, but nowadays, the kids don't do so much the sort of the catechism, the Catholic stuff, but they will maybe memorize a poem or practice and rehearse, have a song ready to go. So there's some kind of little thing they have to do to sort of show their worth.
Oh, well,
And
I
they have to
would.
do this knowing that these scary devils are waiting outside.
Yeah, I think I'd be pretty good. I mean, wow. I mean, it's amazing, you know, all the different costumes and the work that goes into this. It's just unbelievable. So, okay, so as Krampus is, let's see, how do I want to word this, I guess. So what happens if you're a kid and you're bad? What is expected to occur from Krampus?
Well, you know, the parents in these regions, in the real traditional regions, will talk about the Krampus all year long. If the kid is acting bad, they'll remind them.
Thanks,
the Krampus
Mom.
Is out there waiting for you. Right. So the old folklore has the Krampus doing... So there's two ways to answer that question. The one is, what's the folklore? Which is the Krampus, it takes you away, it kidnaps you, it puts you in, often the Krampuses will have like a basket or a sack that they abduct the naughty children in. And then where they take you? Well, hell is one possibility. Also, there's stories, they'll take them to a cave, they'll throw them in a frozen lake, they'll take them out in the woods and eat them. So the folklore is pretty... pretty grisly. Now, what really happens is the punishment that's actually, this is something that's also changing and is kind of a little controversial, but the Krampuses carry switches and little bundles of birch twigs, or they might have, there's other kinds of switches, little whips they use. So they don't hit the kids, but they will stomp around the house. It's basically sort of a show of force. So they'll stomp around the house, make it a huge ruckus. They also, a big part of it, which Americans are not as aware of, is that they have these big, heavy belts that they wear that are fixed with half dozen or maybe fewer, because they're actually very large bells that are like this. Some of them are in some areas are the size of cannonballs. So you can hear the Krampus coming from far, far away. And once they're actually, there's six of them in your small house, it's like a storm. So there's just this sort of overall impact of noise and big scary monsters stamping around. So it's kind of, like you said, it's sort of a visual display that's supposed to be, you know, very, it's very fearsome and very supposed to induce good behavior. So
yeah.
They will also make the whole ritual with St. Nicholas is, it's geared towards kids, I would say under 10 maybe, but the family is, families assemble for these things in their homes, and the older kids, the teenagers, or the older family members will be there too. And the Krampus might strike those people or attack them. And one thing they'll do is also try to drag family members out into the snow and throw them out. But this is like, you know, the guys in the costumes are in their 20s, and then the people they're dragging out are in their 20s. So that's more peer-to-peer kind of play. So the hard stuff is more reserved for, you know, somebody that they know can take it. The tradition's always been pretty watchful about, you know, going too far and who can deal with what sort of impact.
So that's actually, I like the fact that it's used as, hey, you better go, you know, do the dishes, or you better, you know, act right, or not, disrupt class or whatever, because Krampus will get you. So it's more, you know, it's not beating your kid up against the wall or anything. I guess it's a great way of and I guess it's used just simply to put them on the straight and narrow, and if not, this is what's going to happen to you. So and being mythological, that, you know, it's not going to happen. However, I bet there's some sort of truth in some of this in the past. I'm not sure. But if you hang in there for us, Al, I'm going to ask you at the end of this break that we're going to have, and you can give me that answer, because I know that there's probably going to be an answer to that. These Krampus runs and things are really neat, and we're going to talk to you when we come back. We're going to ask Al if it's any different in the different regions, the way people celebrate Krampus. Because it seems to be just this big kind of parade of things and a party, and... I have seen it here in the States, so I guess it's slowly happening in the States, and people are really liking it and having a good time with it. So it's always interesting to find out the story behind this, right? Oh, well, again, Merry Christmas. This is the last couple of hours we can do it, and, you know, rest in peace George Michael, and Last Christmas, died today at 53. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis. It's Coast to Coast AM, and as he said, Connie Willis here from the 840 WHAS studios out of Louisville, Kentucky. And that right there, Last Christmas, Wham! What a great tune. Well, it's always going to be a great special tune. George Michael passed away today at 53. Still getting mixed reports of how. They said he passed peacefully at his home, and we're starting to get word that possibly heart failure. But he's definitely going to be loved forever. And that tune right there brings you back into the spirit of Christmas. And Merry Christmas to you. Some of you are still in the world of, in the time of Christmas. And a lot of you are like, man, I didn't get what I wanted for Christmas this year. Darn it, man. Well, what was it you wanted? Membership to ParanormalDate.com and ConspiracyDate.com. You want to meet someone special in your life? Well, absolutely. Who doesn't want to have someone special in their life? And if you're an audience member right here, if you are a Coastie or you're at all interested or just listening right now, then you are into this kind of really cool conversations that we have here, and you're looking for someone special to share it with so that you can talk about this stuff too. It is important to have the person in your life also talk about this. I mean, it really is. Everybody that finds someone that will be of like mind in this area, because if you're in this area of thinking, you're passionate about it, and you want somebody close to you to be just as passionate. When they're not, it's kind of hard, because you will be around other people that are. So, hey, that's why George said, Paranormal Date, ConspiracyDate.com. Put it together, boom. There's over 55,000 people on it. And if you'd like to do the same thing, and by the way, Canadians, you can as well. It's available for you. Then get on there. I'll give you a little keyword. You're going to use the word code. It's free to sign up. Then you use the code George, and you're going to get a really, really nice discount. And if anything special happens between you and somebody, please let us know. We want to hear about those stories, okay? Maybe together you guys get the best picture, an even better picture of Bigfoot that's ever been done before, or something cool like that. You know, anything that happens, please let us know. You are not alone. And if you'd like to know more about it, go to coasttocoastam.com. I'm Connie Willis. Merry Christmas. Welcome back to Coast AM. Connie Willis here. Merry Christmas for those of you still celebrating, and good for you if you are. Tonight we have Al Ridenour, and we're talking about Krampus. And we're learning about how Krampus fits in with Christmas and the different traditions and how it's all different all over the world. In fact, I think I can't remember what my last question was, but I do want to ask you, Al, besides welcoming you to the show again, I want to ask you about in different regions. I mean, it seems to be celebrated everywhere, and you actually went on an adventure learning and researching this. First of all, before you do tell me how it's all different all around the region, how cool is that? Does a publishing company give you money to go and do that research? I mean, that is really pretty cool.
Well, no comment. I wish they did. The book kind of grew out of a personal passion that I had, and in fact, most of the traveling involved was undertaken before I started the book. It was just an opportunity for me to. I was in Europe, and it was the right season, so it was an opportunity to go and see some of these Krampus events. And then a lot of the research is really just sort of footwork following up on people that I'd met, online, correspondence, emails, and stuff like that. So I wish that I had traveled a little more, but I feel like I have. I mean, just reaching out to all of these groups, everyone, as I was saying earlier, these weren't my personal photos, but everybody was extremely generous and eager to actually have their group featured in the book. So there's a lot of sort of pride in they've taken in their costumes and masks and performances. So I got to know a lot of people that way, even if it was not face to face for some of this. But as far as the regionality of the customs, there are certain styles that I can now recognize from certain regions. One of the places that I did go is known as where the tradition is best preserved, and it's an area south of Salzburg, in the it's called the Bad Gastein, and it's the Gastein Valley. There's several little villages there, and they're known really all over Austria as home to the real thing. And so their tradition is a little more, let's just say, wild. And in fact, that's what got me excited about going, because I started to read about it, and I started to do some, you know, online research always involves checking out YouTube videos nowadays. And I kept seeing these videos of these crevasses marauding through the streets, and it, very, very uncontained, very just running this way and that, and barging into restaurants. And so
that's what I've seen, and that's why I'm like, what is this Krampus thing? Yeah,
these are little towns. I won't call them villages really, but they're small towns, and it's sort of just preserved that kind of loose kind of anarchic form. And now in bigger cities, the tradition is it really starts to resemble like a Halloween parade. So rather than people running, you know, costume Krampus is running this way and that, it's all mapped out on a linear course through the main, you know, the main drag of the city, and you know, the police will go in first and put up barriers to separate the performers and the performers and the spectators. Not that the spectators still will get swatted by the Krampuses; they'll lean over the
barrier. Oh, they will.
it's basically more contained. But the old form that survives in this one region is particularly well known for it. It's not the only region. I won't go into all the geography of it, but there's certain areas where it still lives on like that, and then the other areas, it's more related to how big the city is than exactly where it is geographically. But in the other areas, it is more like a parade. And the event we're talking about here, not to confuse people, is there are two kinds of ways one could encounter the Krampus in Europe, and one is what I was talking about initially, which is the visit of Saint Nicholas and his little troop of, like, you know, six devils maybe, and he has an angel assistant, he has another guy who carries the treats in a basket. So those little troops that go town to house to house, that's like the core of the tradition, and that's about the kids more. And then so then there's the thing called the Krampus Run, which is what you were talking about seeing an American version of in Philadelphia, and what I think people are more familiar with, because this is the thing that's taken over in, you know, in big cities in Germany and Austria, but also, you know, as you were saying, also in the U.S. And there's people emulating the Krampus Run in Japan as of this year, I saw too. So this is the slightly more modern event, and what it really just grew out of these troops that would crisscross the town on the way to visiting different houses. They called just the house visit is what they call it. So you have those two different phenomena, and the house visit, you know, it relies on you being in a small town, because they have to go from house to house. The people can't be far flung throughout a city. Usually they do it on foot. Sometimes it's in the country, so they might ride tractors to go from one isolated farmhouse to another.
That's funny. Because these costumes, by the way, it's not just people walking around. They're in these costumes that are just, I mean, I don't know how long it takes. It's almost like they do the run, and then the next night maybe they relax and sleep in or something, but then they start right away to make that costume for the next year.
In the areas where it's really a strong tradition, everything's canceled the next day.
Oh, well, yeah.
Decimated.
But the costumes are extensive. I mean, they are just put together so well. I mean, as scary and as grotesque as they are, they're beautifully put together.
The people that make the costumes, it's a specialization that is really respected. Each troop will have a certain mask carver that they work with, and they're usually very proud of that mask carver. And it also gives each of the troops they have a cohesive look, so it looks like, you know,
right,
some art director in a film.
Yes,
you guys should all look like this. And you'll have some variations, but they look very slick. So they'll have the mask carver, then they'll have another guy they go to who makes the suits, and that's going to usually be somebody who the rest of the year. These are all like it's changing a bit, but they're cottage industries. It's kind of an outside hobby line for some of these, like the mask carver. He does other kinds of wood carving during the year, but he starts, you know, building up his inventory of masks, and, you know, come late summer. And then the suits are all there, like usually made, they're traditionally made from animal hides or leather. So then that person that does the suits part of the year, he'll make leather jackets or whatever. And then there's the bells too, which are, that'll be, you know, somebody who, you know, does metalworking. So they have all these different artisans that they go to for each component of their suit. And it's quite an investment too.
Yeah, and it shows. I mean, it really shows. Is there any type of, you know, when you watch the Harry Potter movies and those type of movies where you see these strange characters come out of the woods or whatever, has anybody done anything with the Krampus like that? Because that, I would just think the costume designers and folks that are into that, just like all that you described, would just absolutely have a field day with a movie with these characters and, you know, with the Krampus.
You mean
somebody must
with what exactly? Sorry.
Well, would you know when you see Lord of the Rings and you see Harry Potter and how well they put those costumes together and they have great scenery. I mean that this Krampus is perfect for that type of filmmaking.
Oh yeah. I would say that the costumes, you know, rival anything that's done in Hollywood.
It's amazing. Yes.
They don't. You know, there's not the mobility in the masks. They don't. You know, they're wood. So there's another kind of like charm they have because they're carved artifacts. They're kind of folk art. But the resemblance with those characters is, you know, it's been noted over in Europe too. And they talk about the people will discuss the masks and kind of class them, and they talk about orc masks because, you know, referencing the Lord of the Rings, because, you know, they definitely look like orcs from one of the films. There's kind of always a struggle in Austria and Bavaria, which kind of masks do you like? Do you like the early, most traditional masks are really actually very simple, and you wouldn't be what you're describing so much. They look a little more like a folk art product. They're a little rustic.
Yeah.
They're more rustic. But the other ones, they use the same, you know, they're not always, it's not always wood either. They can be cast resin, so that they, and they used to use aluminum for some masks too. So there's like a whole variety of techniques and materials that they use, and some of them, yeah, definitely have that Hollywood look and that level of detail and articulation.
Yeah, well, I can't, you know, if they see your book, I mean, I think it would inspire one of those people that does films like that to go, oh my gosh, here's a, you know, here's a trilogy that we can do with this, without a doubt. I mean, wow, because I know Hollywood has jumped onto it, because I know that at least the cartoon guys, The Simpsons has done a Krampus, Family Guy has done a Krampus. American Dad has had a Krampus. I am sure South Park did. Did South Park do something too? That would be like, I couldn't imagine.
South Park would. I haven't seen any Krampus on South Park yet.
Oh, okay. I would think they might. Maybe one day. But we've seen them on the other ones, haven't we?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think of that when you see that?
He's been guest starring a lot over the last 4 or 5 years, I'd say. And there's, you know, episodes of... the television show Grimm had an episode. The Office even had a sort of Krampus-like character at one point, the American version of that show. Yeah, he's been showing up more and more, and on American or English language TV, I should say, in movies and comic books. And what's interesting is you kind of like in the U.S. we're evolving our own kind of version of the character based on, you know, what works in our culture. So. Kind of getting a new breed of Krampus in the works here.
Yeah, and that's how it happens and develops. It's just like, you know, in each story, it all develops along the way. Now, when you know, kind of comparing it to the traditional Christmas that we have, you know, the scary part of Christmas to me, the scarier area is the Christmas Carol by Dickens. And this, you know, is there any type of relation there, or what do you think Dickens would think about this?
Actually, yes, absolutely. That's one of the few links that our English language Christmas culture has with all of this there's a whole body of folklore and mythology associated with Christmas way beyond the Krampus. My book is called The Krampus and the Old Dark Christmas, and the Old Dark Christmas actually is three of the chapters in my book are devoted strictly to the Krampus and how the things we've been talking about with the masks and so forth. But there's this holiday culture that is dark, actually, and is associated with ghost stories. So Dickens, when he wrote that, and Dickens wrote another couple of ghost stories that were set at Christmas. There's one, I think, there's one that's a goblin and a grave digger, and he wasn't alone. There were, in Great Britain, more so than here, Americans are kind of like, ghost story, Christmas, how does that go together? And as a kid, I always thought that was exciting, because I always liked Halloween, so I was happy to see that stuff carried on into Christmas. But in the UK, there's actually still a tradition of ghost stories for the holidays, and the BBC I was just watching some of these shows recently. They had a Ghost Stories for Christmas series that would run, and this goes way back, into the literature, where people, you know, in Shakespeare's time, would sit around at winter and talk about, winter was a time for people's imaginations to run wild. Your agricultural labor is done, or whatever kind of work you do is likely not really happening in full steam during the winter. So it's a time for imagination, and I think the mood of the season also sets kind of a solemn tone that we fight it off with candles and lights, but it's out there. All these lights are in the middle of this dark, this winter darkness. So
it's The Shining at that point. Now it's The Shining. You're talking about The Shining to me.
Yes.
Right. So sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm just now picturing, here's Johnny. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
We could say that was a Christmas too, I suppose.
That's right.
Let me know when that was. It was over winter.
It was. Yeah. It was. You were setting that up for me there. Well, that's the imagination of the mind. There's no question about that. Well, your journey on this book. I mean, you were talking about. It also came to mind Tim Burton when you were talking to. He did take Christmas and put that twist on it.
Yep.
There.
Mm-hmm.
He has a very unique twist. It's kind of funky for me, but that's kind of more the closer thing. As I was looking into your book too, I remember. Do you? This might be a personal thing with you. How do I say this word? Do you like Santa or not, or are you also upset with Coca-Cola? You address Coke a few times, and I know Santa and Coke go together. So I wanted to know: are you a Pepsi guy? Is that the deal?
Actually, I'm a terrible Coke. I don't want to say Coke addict, but I actually do enjoy Coca-Cola, and yes, over Pepsi, I'd say. And I am not a. Whenever they know about what I've written about or know something about the Krampus, they always assume in this country they assume it's some kind of a lot of people, and like people that I encounter that are attracted to this are they're disgusted with Christmas or Santa Claus or one of the, part of whichever symbol of Christmas they don't like, and I don't know if your question is more about Coke versus Pepsi, but I like the traditional Christmas too. And the thing is, in Europe, this is not, in this country, the Krampus has become, it's kind of became this sort of alternative way to embrace the holiday without, accepting any of those traditional sort of Norman Rockwell Christmas, or the Coca-Cola Santa, as you were saying. So it became this way to sort of reject that, and yet still have something exciting to do. But in Europe, it's part of their tradition. It's not a gesture of defiance or rebellion or anything like that. It's highly traditional, and so there's a very different attitude, here and there in terms of where one stands on if you like the Krampus, how do you feel about Christmas or Santa Claus or any of that.
Right. Well, again, going back to just the costumes again and how much time people put into this celebration and the parade, that they may be a part of whatever it is wherever they are in the country. But I think Broadway would love this story. I think they'd do something really wonderful with it. The theater of it is what is has caught me, and it's just by looking at your book, more than anything. So everybody stick around. We're going to be talking to Al a little bit more here, of course, with Krampus. We've got another hour with him. And you know what? We're going to take some of your phone calls. If you want to talk to him and ask him something about Krampus, fine, let's do that. That's not a problem. Coming back in with a little Last Christmas Wham, George Michael on Coast to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, and Merry Christmas.